great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here. Time to take a look at your home on the show today. Talking home improvement and a fall checklist with our guest, John Freiberger, registered home inspector, more than 45 years of experience. His company, Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Great to have him back with us. And we're going to talk about preparing your home for winter. And, of course, we'll take any of your home improvement questions. What do you want to know about keeping the cold air out? What questions do you have about your furnace or radiator, perhaps? Join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. John, I looked over the fall checklist, and it's a dandy. It's and I thought, oh, every year there's a few things when I look at that a checklist. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, that's right. I looked at it too, and I went, I know I need to revise this. And I looked at it and go, I can't even think of anything to add. I must have been sharp the day I wrote this.
Well, we have that checklist up. If you go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry, ideas@wpr.org/Larry, and go to today's date, and under the comments section, you'll find a link to the whole checklist. And it's a long one, but two or three pages long. But it's simple. You can look at it and you instantly know, okay, yep. Mm-hmm. That's something to do.
One can quite literally check it off as you do it. And there's stuff in there having to do with energy, but there's also safety stuff.
Yeah.
You know, we often forget to check our smoke and CO detectors. Change the batteries. Do we have a fire extinguisher in the house? Well, we should. Where is it? How many years since it's been checked? Is a little arrow in the orange or the red instead of the green? There's all these things that we need to look at, and a lot of them are really simple. But, you know, safety things first, energy second. I mean, safety saves your life. Energy saves your money.
Well, on the money side of things, I know one of the things you might harp on is air leaks.
You're right, Larry, and I'm seeing more and more problems. So, you know, we throw insulation at homes, and I mean throw. And sometimes we keep dumping it in the attic, and we don't fix the air leaks. I was in a house 2 days ago, a 1978 house, turned out had no vapor barrier. No air seal around the attic hatch. There's spots all over the attic because of moisture coming up. And then the lady was complaining to me about all the mice. Well, it took me 5 minutes to find the mouse hole. The air leaks, about 40% of our heat loss in the winter is actually air leaks in an older house. So we can add a heck of a lot of insulation and get that down to 35%. But we haven't gotten much for our money. And if we've added the insulation before we test for air leaks, well, then the insulation's all in our way. So we need to really think about air leaks. And it's pretty easy to check. I mean, we always talk about when you want to check your sill boxes, if you've got insulation in them, pull the insulation out. And if it's all gray, brown, and dirty on the outside, we know that the dust is being brought in by air leaks. So then we need to take some great stuff or something and picture frame it and seal it and put the insulation back in. We can do the same thing in the attic. You can open your attic hatch and pull up some insulation, and if it's all sort of gray at the bottom, well, that's an issue. Or we can take a look, especially in the newer houses that have plywood-oriented strandboard sheathing, we just take a look at where the nails are coming through your roof. Mm. If there's little black rings around all of them, or as we have in the checklist, in the middle of winter on a nice cold day in January, open that hatch and look, and if there's frost around all of them, well, we know we've got air leaks and humidity leaks coming out of your house because it's bringing that warm, moist air up into the attic, and that's condensing out on the nail heads, which are the coldest thing. So that means we have a lot of energy loss, and this is especially true in older houses. Now, since June 1 of 1980, when the Uniform Dwelling Code came in, we've been doing a slightly better job. But like I said, I looked at a 1978 house. You'd think that's a modern house. No. No vapor barrier, no air seal, no nothing. And out in the country on LP. So we need to think about some of these things to reduce our environmental impact and, frankly, to save a few bucks.
You know, speaking of insulation, Daryl in Menominee Falls has a question that relates right to it. Daryl, thank you for calling.
Yes, I have an old house that I'm renovating, and I did blow in insulation in the walls, the exterior walls, combination of inside and outside. And I have asbestos siding also on the exterior, which I'm still getting estimates on what it's going to cost to remove that or keep it on.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, if I do remove it or leave it, what's a good vapor barrier if I leave it on or not leave it on? Or is it better to leave the building breathe? What would you recommend for sealing the exterior and insulating it properly?
Well, Daryl, I wonder if you might be confusing vapor barrier and air barrier, because the vapor barrier needs to be on the warm side, right? We can't have that vapor going into the interstitial space, the space between the studs, and then condensing inside the wall. So if you've got things ripped open in the inside, you're going to want to put a visqueen over the face of the studs before you drywall or plaster, and you want to seal it really, really carefully so that we aren't getting vapor into the air. Now, that's also going to help a little bit with the air sealing. But if you do take the asbestos hardboard siding off, the other thing to think about is, and this may depend upon your windows and everything else, is I'm assuming you've got a 2x4 wall, right? So we've got about 3.5 inches, and most of the insulation you put in is going to be about R3. So right now you've got about a R10, R11 wall system, which is okay, but not great. If we could add a 3/4 inch or an inch of urethane foam on the exterior, that is going to basically increase our wall insulation by about 75%.
Ooh.
So that's sort of big. So what I would do, if you take the siding off, you're probably going to have tar paper or something else on the house, and that can stay if you don't want to take it off, but put Tyvek or another house wrap over it and be sure to read the insulation instructions, tape it, seal it, flash it the way it's supposed to be. Then put 3/4 inch or an inch of foam on it, and then put on whatever kind of siding you're thinking of. Now, if you tape that foam as well, you've got a double weather-resistant barrier, right? You already have the Tyvek.
Yeah.
But the code actually allows you to put foam on the exterior of a house without Tyvek and tape it and seal it. So that gives you a double seal. That is going to reduce your heat loss through your walls and your wind loads just absolutely tremendously.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot to think about there, Daryl. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in to them. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us. Email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. These changing temperatures, what's the biggest, or let's say most common damage that's caused by these changing temperatures?
Well, it's probably going to be moisture issues, Larry. Because in the summer, it's humid, but it's hot. We get sun loads on walls. Things have a tendency to dry out. But then we get into 3 rainy days in a row in the middle of October. And if we've got some leaks somewhere, those leaks are going to persist for a while. It's not a big temperature differential between the inside and the outside right now. 55 outside, 70 inside. So you've got some heat coming from the inside to the outside, drying out the walls. But this is the time of year when I actually worry a little bit more about water getting into the walls, because it's going to linger there for a while.
Yeah, that makes that makes sense. So the thing to do is?
Well, we want to... The air sealing is certainly number one. People need to analyze what's going on in their house. And one of the things on the checklist you'll see is take a look at your last 3 years' utility bills. Now, they're higher every year because the utility bills are going up, but how much are you paying to heat and cool your house? And if those bills seem to be a little bit on the high side, you could just have an energy audit done. Now, energy audits run $400 to $500. The inspector will come in with a thermal camera, which is great, infrared camera. And you wouldn't believe the detail that you can see in that camera. You can see air leaks. You can see what's cold, what's well insulated. If there's insulation missing in part of the wall, you can see it. The other thing that they will probably do is they'll block off your front door and put a big calibrated fan in there, and they'll depressurize your house to 50 pascals. And then they can measure the leakage by measuring how fast the fan has to run to keep it at 50. Now, I've talked to energy inspectors who've done houses and said, we couldn't get it below 35. It leaks so bad. Well, at that point, you start saying to yourself, okay, if I can decrease my utility bills by 60%, how much is that a year? And then multiply that by five, and does it make sense to invest that kind of money? Well, it probably does, because you're getting a 20% return on your investment, which is pretty hard to get.
You know, you mentioned blower doors, and Doug in Madison has a question about blower door tests. Let's go there. Doug, hi.
Hello. I was wondering about the blower door test. I have a stucco home, and I was wondering if, in addition to identifying what kind of insulation needs are for the house, if it would also help me pinpoint where the bats and the mice are getting in.
Generally, yes, because as I mentioned earlier when I was looking at this house earlier in the week, is the mice. What happens in the fall is the mice feel the warm air coming out of your house, and they go, oh, Doug's put out the welcome mat. There's a nice warm hole here. It's warm inside. We're going to move in. And that's basically what happens. Bats are, bats are a summer thing, so and a lot of that is the roof and the details. What's great about stucco houses is you've got a pretty good barrier on the exterior. Doug, how old is your house?
It was built in 1928.
Oh, excellent. So you've probably got an old-fashioned lime-based stucco out there, which you need to maintain very carefully. And a lot of your leaks are going to be where the stucco meets the foundation. Your ring joists are probably going to be leaky. It's going to be leaky around the windows. It's going to be leaky where the stucco meets the roof. And if you've got some penetrations that are poorly sealed, you're going to find the leaks there. But I think it's probably going to be well worth doing.
Yeah. I had one. I had a blower door test on the lake home that I had. And there was I saw where the problems were, but there were some small points that showed up on the infrared that were just pretty small areas and fairly easy to fix.
That's right. You can find things about the size of a nail hole with a good infrared camera. I mean, I've got a cheap one. I've got a $5,000 camera, and it's just amazing what I can show people. I don't pretend to do energy inspections.
Yeah.
But when I was doing a lot of home inspections, I always carry the camera along because it helped me find areas that were problematical. And often I would then say, well, we got problems. Now hire a real energy inspector. I'm just a home inspector. It really is. Energy inspectors are really good.
Yeah.
And, of course, check with your local utilities, see if whom they might recommend and if they might have some money for you.
Yeah. Doug, that help?
I appreciate that. I'm looking into getting this done sometime this fall.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Fall or winter. I mean, midwinter is absolutely great because, boy, do you see things. in the summer, you don't. A good inspector can inspect a house in the summer. I can't to really find the energy issues. But the colder, the bigger the temperature differential you have, the more you're going to see on the camera. And if you have an inspection done, follow the person around. Look over his or her shoulder so that you can see exactly what's going on. And they will print you photos in color so you can look at the west wall and go, well, there's no insulation in the upper left corner, is there?
Exactly. And I did that for when I had mine. And the guy was nice and explained things as we went along. And it was very instructional. So it was a good thing to have done. Doug, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau's our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement and the fall home improvement checklist with our guest, John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, his firm, Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. Great to have him with us. Questions for him, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. And before we go back to the phones, you did mention something to me just off air here a minute ago about paint and stucco and problems that are associated with paint and stucco.
Yeah, well, we could spend the next 20 minutes on that, Larry, but I'm going to make it real quick. I think that Doug with his stucco house has either a Portland cement stucco or he's got a lime-based stucco. The lime-based stucco is great stuff if it hasn't been painted or if it's been painted with the right paint, and the right paint is... It used to be called calcimine paint, but basically what it is whitewash.
Oh.
And you put it on the wall, and the calcium goes in, and it fortifies the wall. So every time you paint the house, your stucco gets tighter and tighter and tighter. But unfortunately, what we see in a lot of houses is that people go on it with things like latex paint. And so now we can no longer really restore the stucco through the painting. And then it gets to be a lot more complicated because the old calcimine paint... The nice thing about lime is, to a certain extent, it's self-healing. So you'll go into old lime basements in farmhouses. There are very few cracks. Well, there were cracks, but the calcium carbonate migrated around and refilled the crack.
Wow.
And that can happen on stucco as well. So occasionally I will see, you know, I'll get University Heights in Madison or something, and I'll see an original stucco house, and I'll go, that's absolutely wonderful. Now, if you want, you can paint that, and it's going to make that stucco even better. With the proper paint, yeah. There's some of these old systems. That's what I like about historic restoration, is you find out how smart some of our great-grandparents were.
Tim in Janesville, it's your turn. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
So I'm actually a state-certified energy auditor. So I was listening to your show, and I just figured I'd call. So what you're saying is very correct. That's exactly what we do. We set up the blower door, run it to 50 Pascal, and we go around with the thermal imager, and we take pictures. And it does. It tells us right away where air leakage is coming from, if insulation's in the wall, if it's falling down, anything like that.
And are you busy, Tim? Do you have a lot of business?
Yes. I actually work for Community Action, so it's a state-funded thing.
Yeah.
We work with people, anybody on energy assistance can apply, and we can come and inspect their homes.
Yeah.
And it does. It saves a lot of money for people.
Yeah. Tim, thanks for backing up what John had to say there. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, very, very important work, both as far as saving money for people and as far as the environment. You know, our houses account for so much energy. Our building construction is 38% of the carbon footprint on Earth. And then you start looking at the fossil fuels we're burning or whatever to heat and cool, and we're looking at even more. And I think if we take a look at housing, commercial buildings, and put them all together, we're probably in the upper 40% of the carbon that we're using is going into our habitations, be them commercial. And it's pretty obvious that we're in big trouble on climate change. So I think the work that Tim is doing is very important. The other thing that Tim reminds me of, and I think I mentioned it briefly earlier, but check with your local utility, check with Focus on Energy, see what money is out there, not only for energy inspection, but are there some grants out there that if you're going to retrofit your house, the utility will pick up part of it, Focus on Energy, or somebody will pick up part of it. So just because you're worried about it being a big financial reach, do some research first. See if there is a pocket of money that can help you out.
Yeah, makes good sense. Ben in Verona, we go to you now. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Larry. Thanks for having me on. Hey, I've got a 25-year-old Midland home that we got built in 98. So it's got the original furnace in it. And air conditioning, it's a carrier system, you know, with the April air. We've got it serviced over the years. It run sounds pretty good. And but now that it's getting up there, I'm beginning to wonder if it's not a bad idea to have it inspected and see if it should be replaced. I'm getting to retire in a couple of years, so I kind of want to get some of the major stuff replaced in the house before I retire. And then another question, real quick one, is on the first fellow that was on there about the vapor barriers. Just kind of spurred a question to me. I want to re-side the house when I retire, and I know it's a 2x6 construction, if I remember right, and it has the Visqueen vapor barrier on the inside wall, or they sheetrocked over it, and then they put 3/4-inch OSB, I think it was tongue and groove, too, but they didn't put a vapor barrier on the outside, that Tyvek, and I don't know, would that be a good idea to do, you know, when I put the new siding on?
Sure. Okay. Ben, let me ask you a real quick question about your carrier furnace. Is this vented into a chimney or is it vented through PVC pipe to the exterior?
I'm pretty sure it's PVC. It's like an airtight system.
Okay.
It's got the little flapper in one of the vents.
Yeah. Okay, so it's probably the old Carrier SX series, which was a pretty decent series, 90-some percent efficient. Mm-hmm. The new ones are a little bit better. Generally, that furnace had about a 20-year life. And then at that point, the heat exchanger started going. So I would do a little bit of investigation. If you you should be able to get the model of your furnace, and it's on the plate, and it's probably inside the, you just take off the top panel, there'll be a plate on the side. It's going to say it's an SX blah, blah, blah. With the numbers, you can go online, say what's the efficiency. But you are getting up to the point where this is going to die. Now, if it dies New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, it's going to be expensive.
Yes.
So you may want to think about replacing it simply because it is, at this point, 25 years old. And that is an old Carrier furnace. A good product, but still.
Yeah.
There's a lot of heating, cooling, and eventually you end up with cracks. And then the CO2 alarm goes off Christmas Eve and we've got a problem. So I would probably replace that furnace. So 2x6 walls, that's great. So you've got probably R19 insulation in the wall. You've got a little bit. You've got the fiberglass Visqueen on the inside. That's all good. You've got an R20 wall. If you do not, if you have OSB on the exterior without Tyvek, or there's companies other than Tyvek.
Yeah.
We almost use Tyvek the way we use the word Kleenex.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you do want to put a weather-resistant barrier on the exterior because that is going to help a great deal as far as upgrading the air sealing of your house. And again, go online to DuPont. They have good installation instructions. It's well illustrated. You can actually do it yourself.
Yeah. There you go, Ben. I think your mind was working the right way there when you were talking about a couple of years before retirement and getting a few things done while you still had a little extra cash coming in. So good for you. Thank you for calling. Karen in Madison, we give you a chance now. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thank you. I have old rain gutters on my house with some pretty inexpensive insert leaf guards. And some of the gutters have some dents in them from branches that have fallen in storms and things. And I have tried to get bids from different people to either replace, repair, give me some advice about what to do. I mean, even some of the fascia boards are starting to rot out because the corners are all leaking.
Yeah.
And I have been getting bids from $2,000 to $16,000, and I have no clue how to evaluate whether I'm getting sound advice or rip-off advice or whatever. Some people just say, oh, we just need to rehang them and fix the corners. Some people say, oh, we got to, you know, do the super duper stuff, and it's a small house, so you know it's not gonna. Well,
is it a one story?
It's a raised ranch.
Okay. Well, generally, if we can repair something that has the lowest negative effect on our wallets and on the environment, You know, they're going to recycle the aluminum, of course, but still, we've got to melt it down and make more gutters. So I would maybe interview the person who thinks they can repair. Now, very often, if you get an end leak in the gutters, it's a fairly easy fix from the interior. You know, your gutters, the ends of the gutters, if they're up against something, they're not supposed to be up against something. They're supposed to be 1 inch away. If you do have some decayed fascia boards, is this plywood, Karen, or wood fascia boards?
It's a wood fascia board, and it's right up next to it.
And the gutters are probably the old-fashioned ferrule and nail system, where it's a nail that goes right into the fascia board?
I have no idea, but all I know is that every corner is split, and so I get, you know, drips
from
the corners, and that's now leaking. That water then seeps into the corner of where the fascia boards meet, and that's starting to rot on all four corners.
So to fix the fascia boards, you're probably going to have to take the gutters off. So then the question is it worth putting the gutters back up? And, boy, that is a tough one. And I don't, you know, I'm not exactly sure where to tell you to turn. There are a lot of firms in Madison do nothing but gutters and that sort of repair, and they're quite good, but the 2,000, if there's wood repairs that have to be made, and if the gutters have to come off for the wood repairs, but we don't really know how much wood repair. So, Karen, I'm at a little bit of a loss, I'm afraid. If I was standing in your front yard, it'd be a little bit better. But I'm just looking at Larry here, and he doesn't know either. So I'm sorry we can't help you more. I think, you know, whoever seemed to be the most knowledgeable is maybe call them and ask them some questions about what the results are going to be. And whenever you hire somebody, you always want to look at their warranty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Are they guaranteeing they're going to be good for a year, or they're guaranteeing they're going to be good for 5 years? Well, 5 years is really sort of standard in the industry.
Yeah.
So do a little bit more research. I'm sorry we can't help you more.
And, Karen, at least you've given her quite a bit to think about, though, when it comes to the
but does that help, Larry?
Good luck, Karen. Thank you for calling. Well, Jim in Green Bay has a question. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, and thank you for having this show again, very timely. We noticed, first off, our house is about 23 years old. And we've been noticing, since we have a small fireplace in our family room, that all of our ceilings have a bit of ghosting or what looks like strips. Maybe it was from the fireplace. We don't use it that much anymore in the last 10, 12 years. But we see these strips along our ceilings and sometimes going down the wall. And, you know, we know we're going to have to repaint at some point here. We'd like to. But maybe there's another problem. A local builder would put a deck on our house, and I asked him about that. He said, well, maybe you should be looking at your attic insulation. It could have settled, or maybe you have some gaps in it. Again, I'm not sure if that's the case, but I'm more concerned about that ghosting, because if we paint, most likely it'll come back if I'm not doing something about it.
Yeah, so this does this sort of look like a long brown icicle? I mean, sort of the typical water stain?
Well, yeah, kind of like that. It's like if you were to dust it and you'd see these strips where likely the ceiling joists or whatever you call those, the 2x6s are, and you see it going to the corner or where the wall meets the ceiling and then going down a little ways, and then it stops.
Yeah.
Not much.
Maybe it sounds like you've probably got a small leak. There's chimneys have really become a problem lately, Jim. We have to actually change how we're making chimneys. Now, what type of chimney do you have? Is this a metal chimney inside a framed wall with siding on the outside, or is it a masonry chimney?
Well, what happened was it ended up being a metal chimney. It's in its own chaser flue going up the side of the wall that they have enclosed.
Yeah.
I can't see up into that area, but it does go from that fireplace up to its own separate little, like, room on the side of the house.
Yep, okay. So I think probably the first thing to check is going to be your roof flashings. Because I'm seeing a lot of people call me and they say, I've got a roof leak. And I go, no, you don't. You've got a flashing leak.
Because if the tops of the flashing are not covered, and what I'll find on a house from 2000 is they've put Tyvek around the house and then they put the chimney chase and put anything over it, just OSB. So if water gets through the siding, it runs down inside behind the stuff flashing. So, and that's going to be a fairly easy thing for a contractor to check, or yourself if this isn't a steep roof. I mean, obviously, we don't want you falling off the roof. But I would check the flashing first. And you can't see anything from the attic. I don't think that this is a condensation issue. My guess is that it is some sort of flashing leak. So let's check that first.
Yep, makes good sense. Jim, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Pete in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Pete.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Hey, John. Based on the conversations I've been hearing since 11 o'clock, we need to talk about moisture profile. In particular, I'm hearing things like a suggestion of putting polyurethane insulation on the outside of a house. And one of the callers mentioned about putting a vapor barrier of Tyvek on the outside. Well, we got to understand, Tyvek is not a vapor barrier. It's an air barrier or a rain barrier at best. And that's all you want on the outside of a house. And where I wanted to go with this is there are certain insulation materials that people put on the outside of the houses, which are very wrong because it keeps moisture inside the walls. And that's the last thing we want. As much as we really don't like high heating bills, rot is worse. I assure you, rot is much more expensive yep. than out-of-control heating bill. So when people talk about putting, like, pink insulation on the outside of a house, that's a good way to make sure you get rot because you're going to trap water inside those walls. And so, John, I want you to talk to us about insulation materials that have low PERM ratings, which we put on the inside of the house, and high or loose PERM ratings so that they go on the outside of the house. And then the moisture that gets in the wall inadvertently, electric outlets, whatever, I can keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it, Yeah.
Our first barrier with humidity has to be on the interior because that's where it's the highest. And you're quite right. We get into a lot of old houses. They got visqueen on the wall, but it's torn. There's staple holes. And then when you get to the outlets, there's nothing there. And so we really need to be able to tighten up. And I think thermal imaging may help here in the winter because if the Tyvek isn't tight, that's a place where we're probably going to see some temperature differentials. The state does allow the use of foam on the exterior. I think like the Dow Blue Board is a PERM rating of 0.6 or something. So if the interior is well enough sealed, then we have less concern with the exterior. My favorite thing to do if we're really doing a very significant gut the interior remodeling is to use a spray foam. So that gives us an air seal, a vapor barrier, et cetera. And you know, we can spray it against the outside sheathing. There's going to be a little bit of a... We're not going to get all the way to the studs, so we're going to have a little bit hollow in the wall. But as long as we can keep that wall relatively dry from the exterior, then that's going to perform well. If the exterior wall is getting damp, we're going to end up with the foam popping and delaminating. So it really, as Pete points out, it really is complicated, and you almost have to approach each house at a time. So if you're talking to an insulation contractor, you want to do a little bit of research first. I mean, you can go online places like Boston Building Science and look at some of Joe Stilbrick's articles. He just did one in ASHRAE on problems with spraying foam where we're going to be getting thermal shock. So there's a lot of information out there that you can get on the internet, which is actually correct. And then when you talk to your contractors, you really need to take a look at the profile of the wall. We need to keep that moisture out of the wall, both from the inside and the outside. And as I said, inside, primarily visqueen vapor barrier, outside, Tyvek or something. And Pete is completely right. Tyvek is made to be breathable. That's the good thing about it. He also said more or less a weather-resistant barrier. That's also true.
Mm-hmm.
We have had problems with many of the exterior printed barriers, especially with one that's made here in Wisconsin, who I'm not going to name. But we've had some pretty bad failures. We have not had failures with DuPont, and DuPont seems to really be on top of things. But they are not foolproof, and they have a limited life. And this is why when somebody called in earlier, I said, let's put on the Tyvek, then let's put on the foam, then let's tape the foam. Because then if we end up with surfactant problems in the Tyvek, we've still got the tape foam as an additional barrier. So sort of we talk about belt and suspenders. Is if you don't want your pants to fall down, you better wear both, because something can always happen. So Pete is correct. Research things carefully. Make sure you hire a contractor who really knows what they're doing. You know, in Madison, we've got a couple of absolutely wonderful people who really know a great deal. But anybody can buy a truck and start blowing in cellulose, and those are the people who need to avoid.
Pete, thank you again. Appreciate it. David in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 1911 5,000-square-foot house in downtown Madison. I run it as a B&B, so there are 5 guest rooms. We have a steam heat, one thermostat. We have no air conditioning other than 7 window units.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at a complete replacement. And I'll tell you, I like steam heat, except the customers that are unaccustomed to the tiny hiss can wake them up.
Yeah. So you're thinking geothermal?
And we're looking at geothermal, and I'm wondering if for heating and cooling, where each guest room is zoned, we can zone everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you think geothermal might be a ways to go, and it seems to be a good, pretty significant price uplift for that. But just kind of wanted to know what you thought of geothermal.
Well, we've worked on houses with geothermal, including some really big ones, and it can be complicated.
Yeah.
There are alternatives, and certainly heat pumps are an alternative at this point for both heating and cooling. And then depending upon this, if it's a two-story house, you know, sometimes we can have an air handler in the attic, air handler in the basement. Sometimes you use high-velocity ductwork so we don't have ductwork all over the place. It's always very difficult replacing steam heat unless there's spaces where you can put in or you can put in the ducts. But certainly steam heat has a tendency to be inefficient thermally on the scale that we have for homeowners. I mean, often you're looking at 80-83% efficiency versus heat pumps, which are, at this point, many of them are up in 96 and sometimes even higher. So I would probably talk to a real good Madison contractor who is familiar with heat pumps and with geothermal. Yeah, the price change for geothermal. Now, I guess, David, one question I might have for you is, are you in a historic district, or is your house possibly a standalone candidate for the state historic register?
We are on the national register.
Wonderful. Okay. So you are looking at a 25% tax credit for your changes to the HVAC system. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Because that really is going to help a lot. Some things that were not terribly affordable with the tax credits are going to be affordable. So I would go ahead and research it. We've certainly had good success. And this is, I'm not an HVAC designer. I know enough to work with an HVAC designer to make things work. But there are people in Madison who have done this successfully. So I would check with them and take a look at some of their projects and see what makes sense for you.
Yeah, and the geothermal, you need space for geothermal. That is a big requirement.
Yes, you do. And part of the problem you run into is what is your elevation? If you're on the top of a hill, you may end up having to have longer wells put down. So there's a lot of different things that we really need to talk to a good designer for.
Yeah, I've known some people who have put in geothermal were not happy because the piping was, they were too close together because of the space requirement.
Right.
So something to think about, David. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Tom in Cedarburg, we'll get to you in just a minute. A reminder that our guest today is John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement today on the show with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. John's been with us a long, long time and does a great job. We have all our lines filled, so we'll go back. And Tom in Cedarburg is next in line, so let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi, guys. My question is, my furnace contractor thinks it's a good idea to run a some piping or some to the outside of the house and bring in cool air all year round, especially in the wintertime even. And it seems like you're going backwards to bring cool air, you know, into your furnace. And I was wondering too, I thought that heat pumps only worked like down in Arkansas where it didn't get much below, you know, like 20 degrees. So that's what I have for you.
Okay.
Two good questions. Heat pumps, we've really seen changes in the last 10 years, Tom. We now have heat pumps that I believe are working to 25 below zero. So the old ones often had backup coils of some sort, like electrical, but they are getting better and better and better. And, of course, the question from David was geothermal. So we don't care what the temperature is outside because we're working with 55-degree soil temperatures. So the geothermal does make a lot of sense. As energy efficiency moves on and the efficiency of heat pumps, we're going to be seeing more and more of them. I think in 20 years, people are going to go, what's a furnace? Now, as far as bringing outside air in, this is actually a code requirement. And part of it is that our houses, a modern house, is supposed to be quite tight. So when you run the kitchen hood or the bathroom exhaust fans, you are basically trying to suck air out of something. You're depressurizing your house. So what the code has is in many basements, you'll see an insulated duct running to the exterior. And when the furnace comes on, it does indeed bring some air through that. And you're right, it's inefficient. So heat recovery ventilators are what a lot of HVAC people are recommending. So you can look up heat recovery ventilators online, Tom. You'll get lots and lots of information. The issue with HRVs is mold. Is because they have usually an organic transfer medium, like a core. And the idea is they are going to eject warm, wet air, and they're going to warm the incoming air. And, you know, that works pretty well in the winter. Sometimes in the summer, it becomes a problem. So you end up having extra cleaning. So do a bit of research on it. An HRV certainly is more efficient than makeup air, but it does require some maintenance if we want to keep the house in the air in the house clean.
There you go, Tom. Thank you for calling. Ty and Marinette, we go to you next. Hi, Ty.
Hey, good morning. We have a ranch house, brick, with an attached 2.5-car garage that was built in the early 90s on very sandy soil. And unfortunately, over the years, the garage has started to develop a hump in the middle and sag towards the walls.
Yep.
So particularly in the winter, we get a lot of runoff towards the walls, and we're seeing some damage to the drywall. I did talk to a concrete contractor, and he said about $20,000 to chip the concrete out and re-pour it. Are there any other options besides redoing the whole garage floor?
Yeah, and the $20,000 isn't going to even cover it, unfortunately. So it sounds like what you have is you've got a thickened slab on grade for the garage, and then you've got a pretty heavy exterior wall, and it didn't have enough rebar in it. It wasn't well enough engineered. So what's happened now is the soil underneath your outside walls is compressing, and they have lost elevation. And as that happens, the middle comes up. So the problem is we can cut this out on the interior and pour a new one, but you need to actually talk to an engineer up there and say, are my walls going to continue to move? Because if they are going to continue to move while you've got the garage floor out, we can pour some concrete in the side, probably concrete sonotubes, attach that to the what's left of the wall underneath the brick exterior, and stabilize that permanently. So I would really talk to somebody up there who does structural engineering, and don't throw $20,000 at something where $25,000 is going to perform a whole lot better. I'd hate to tell you to spend more money, but you want to fix this forever.
and not have it come back at you.
Yeah. Good luck, Ty. Thank you for calling. Dan in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, good morning. Under the edge of a first floor window, I found in the basement at the outside rim of the house black mold between two joists. I caulked the window, which I think was the source of the water penetration. I bleached the mold, and then I started scraping, and the outside side sheathing was 3/4 inch OSB, and it just scraped away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering at this point, do I have to remove the stone veneer to do the repair, or is there some way I can do a Band-Aid you get what I mean?
And we just gave Ty the answer to that, didn't we? Band-Aids don't work on broken legs. So you're going to have, now, Dan, do you have thin veneer masonry or full veneer masonry? Is the material like 1.5 inches thick and direct applied, or do you have old-fashioned brick or stone with an airspace behind?
Yeah, there's an airspace behind. It's 3 or 4 inches wide stone.
Good. Okay. That is helpful. But yeah, we have older stone, we have older mortar. It's really hard. But I think you probably need to talk to a restoration mason and have them take a look at it. And you're probably going to need a mason and a carpenter to get this done correctly. The other thing is check every other place on your house where there's possibility of leakage, so that, you know, if we're mobilizing and we've got three things to fix, we fix them all in one go and not come back three different years. So you're in Fitchburg. If you want, shoot me an email. I can recommend a couple of masons who would be good at taking a look at this. They're good at analyzing water entry and at doing this sort of repair, which is a very, very common repair, even more common with thin veneer. You're very fortunate that you've got old-fashioned veneer.
And your email is?
Is frei@chorus.net. And chorus is spelled like a group of singers. CHORUS.
Fry@chorus.net.
Correct.
All right. Dan, good luck. Thank you for calling. And Linda in Appleton, what's on your mind?
I have kind of a three-part question here. Number one, I'm considering updating the furnace. It is 35 years old. I heard the previous caller say, past 20 years, you say. It was a Lennox furnace, and it still's running. What's going to be the sticker shock for a new furnace and AC? Another thing is tax rebates. Are there any available this year or next year that you're aware of? And also, my current furnace man only sells Lennox. Do you consider that? I know it's a good name brand, but are there other brands that I should maybe be investigating?
Well, I think Lennox and Carrier are probably the gold standard in furnaces at this point. You need to go to Focus on Energy and your local utility to see about rebates. If you have a 35-year-old Lennox, it probably is only 80% efficient. So you're looking at some pretty big savings in utility bills. The old furnaces, especially the ones that had a barrel-type combustion chamber, go forever. They aren't as complicated as our modern furnaces, which do so much heat exchanging. They were very simple, but they were very inefficient. So I would indeed replace that furnace. I have seen Lennoxes go for 40 years, but again, it's always New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve when it fails. So do a little bit of research. If he only is selling Lennoxes, I don't see that really as a problem. As far as sticker shock, yes, there's going to be sticker shock. I can't tell you exactly what, but look at last 3 years' utility bills. Look at the savings he can offer you with it. More efficient air conditioning. You want at least a SEER 12 or 14, and then figure out how much money you're going to save.
Yeah.
Make it less painful.
It'll make it less painful, but it's always a little painful. But I can tell you right now, I had one go in middle of January, my furnace went.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the weekend. To add to the cost. And it was an expensive proposition, I can tell you that, to get that you know, because it's got to be done right away.
Exactly. Otherwise, we have frozen pipes.
And you're paying furnace guy a lot more money on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
They never go during the week. I don't think they always go. Like on Friday night at around midnight, you notice.
Yeah, we have to remember, Larry, that things break when they're stressed. So, you know, when it's 50 degrees outside, the furnace is not running that much. When it's negative 25, that furnace is really huffing and puffing, and that's when it's going to break at the worst possible time. But it's logical if you think of it that way.
Linda, thank you so much for calling. John Freiberger, registered home inspector of Freiberger and Associates, our guest today. He'll be with us right up until 12:30, and you will be able to join in with your questions, be it by phone at 800-642-1234 or via email to ideas@wpr.org. We will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with John. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about your fall checklist with our regular guest, John Freiberger. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, and his firm, Freiberger & Associates, is based in Fitchburg, works out of that area. So questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. You can email us to ideas@wpr.org. And, John, we have Bill in Upton with a question. Let's go there. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
If I could make a comment first before my question.
Okay.
We'll say last year I put a brand new furnace into my home. But at the same time, I re-insulated the attic to an R50 to 60. Came out with a savings of about 100 gallons for the winter season of this last year. I was happy with that. That's my comment on that. The new furnace is basically it's got a plastic heat exchanger on the bottom end of it, which can't rust out and is guaranteed for life. That's the comment I have. It's a lot better than what I had because it was 40 years old, and I babied it for the last year because the whole bottom end rusted out on it. No, the question I have for you, back in the 80s, I was a sandblaster, blasting metal with pellets, and had an air conditioner on my helmet. My observation was, back in that day frame, was there was basically a heat exchanger as an air conditioner, and we'll say the exhaust was hot air. And what the air went into the helmet was cold.
Mm-hmm.
Is that basically the same principle as a heat exchanger?
Yeah, air conditioners are heat exchangers. Basically, we're using the compression of gases to be able to shed heat, and then we are cooling a coil, and we're bringing the warmer air from the air handler or furnace over that coil, and we're dropping its temperature.
Yeah.
So it is, basically, I mean, a furnace is a heat exchanger and an air conditioner is a heat exchanger. And then, of course, we also have HRVs, which are heating. So we have a lot of things that through various engineering means can raise or lower our temperatures.
Yeah, there you go, Bill. Thank you for calling. Ruth in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Ruth.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, I bought a home that has an air addition of a sunroom, and it's on posts. And it had sunk into the ground, and they had leveled it before I moved here. However, it's not 100% level. I can't lock my window, so therefore I lose air. It's drafty, and my door is hard to open.
Mm-hmm.
Can I replace the windows, or do I have to have them come and redo it?
I think you want to take a look at the structure first, Ruth, because it could be that you had just piers in the ground without adequate concrete footings underneath them and that they have moved. Now, we've got some marvelous new things that were just approved by the state of Wisconsin last year called diamond footings, which are basically a couple of long pipes through this double, this diamond-shaped piece of concrete. And we can replace old footings with those. So I think you want to talk to a local Chippewa Falls structural engineer, have them come and take a look at it, and then draft a plan, and then find a local remodeling contractor who can level this out and make sure it's not going to move in the future.
Yeah, that's the best approach. I would agree certainly with that. Ruth, good luck. Nick in Plain, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Nick.
Hi. See, I had a question about spray foam insulation. I have an old house with a stone foundation.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to insulate a crawl space that has zero insulation in it. And it's an easily accessible crawl space. It's about 3 feet high from the ground up to the joists. So it's an old stone foundation. I've had it jet treated years ago on the inside,
mm-hmm.
but I was thinking of spray of having foam sprayed on the inside of the stone and then up on the joist area, which is actually a beam. It's a frame house, but it's built on a sill beam. There's ductwork down there for the heat system, but no insulation. So I'm wondering what would be recommended for a type of foam. I'm thinking this doing the stone and the rim joist area, which is that beam.
Well, I'd proceed with great caution. One of the problems that we have when we have old houses with stone foundations is stone does bring water out of the soil and it can move upward. Now, you've jet-created the interior probably with Portland cement, so the moisture that used to go into the stone used to dry to the outside and the inside and can't dry to the inside anymore. So it's going to keep moving up towards that wooden ring joist. Now, if we end up spray foaming in the ring joist, we may end up with the joist tails rotting off. So this is something that you're really going to have to think about. I don't know what the moisture load is in your soil. I mean, it's one of these things where if I come and look at it, I can look for efflorescence and other staining, et cetera. Now, the other problem that we have with the use of foam in a crawl space is that crawl space has to be vented, right? Now, that's cold because we need air change, and the foam needs to have a 15-minute thermal barrier on it. Well, how are we going to do that? We do have foams out there that have 15-minute thermal barriers, but I don't know of a closed-cell foam that has a rating. So then we've got a fire issue. So obviously if a fire got started in the crawl space, which is open to the house, and the foam ignites, then we've got a real serious problem. So this is really difficult. You're in Plain. I think you're going to need to talk to a contractor who really knows what's going on. It's probably going to be somebody out of Madison that does spray foam work, who has worked on old stone foundations before and knows some tricks. Obviously, if I could see it, though I'm not, not that I want to see it, but there is expertise in Madison that I think can help you, but proceed with great caution because you could end up in the situation where you're either lacking a fire barrier, you're causing decay, or you're lacking air change with the basement.
Yeah. Well, lots to consider there, Nick. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris in Milwaukee emailed, recently got ridge vents on their home when they redid the roof. There's an old vent hole on the side of the house for venting into the attic. Do they need to cover this to avoid ice damming, or can they leave it alone if he needs to cover it? How do you do it?
Yeah, I think you can leave it alone. It's probably, I don't know the exact elevation of it. If it's in the top half, it's probably outgoing air. What you need to check if you've put on ridge venting, and this is an older house, is you need to make sure you've got soffit venting. You need to have as much soffit venting as you have ridge venting, or even a little more. Otherwise, what happens is your attic's going to depressurize, and you're actually going to be pulling warm, moist air out of your house, and that is a problem. So talk to your contractor who are putting in the ridge vent. They were supposed to check the soffit vents, and you may have to add soffit venting so that we want the attic to be sort of a separate space. We want the air to come in during the summer and the winter through the low soffit vents, warm either due to summer heat or heat loss in the winter, and then go out through the ridge vent. We do not want to depressurize the attic by having too much upper venting, causing the house then to lose air into the attic.
He also has an older home, and at some point they moved the stairs of the house, so they are left with two weird spots in the house. One's a partial staircase that leads nowhere, and the other is a separate room. It's a closet that has the space below the new staircase. And just wondering what the heck you can do with that.
yeah, talk to your local architect, home designer, or contractor. That's one I can't quite picture.
Peter emailed. He has a 100-year-old wood frame farmhouse remodeled 20 years ago. Had new Marvin double-hung windows installed then. For the past few years, he's been noticing the clear plastic on our exterior screens. He's been using it, and he noticed a considerable temperature difference with and without the plastic. It's also easier on the birds, he says. He has an in-floor radiant heat, no air handling. Is there a downside to doing this? He hasn't noticed any moisture problems.
Yeah, if we don't have a moisture problem, that's great. The Marvin double hungs, I actually have been putting them into some openings in my old farmhouse where I do not have the original windows, those I've restored. And I actually have storm windows. So I've got a double pane glass in the Marvin, then I've got an airspace, and I've got a storm window as well. And I don't think I'd want to live without those storm windows. So your plastic, I think, is probably, it sounds like you've got a Marvin double hung and then a screen on the outside. And covering that screen with plastic is always a little dangerous because you could trap some moisture in between, and Marvin sills are known to decay. That's one problem we've got with Marvin windows is that some of the pine that they use on the sills is not the greatest. So as long as you have no moisture problems, that's great. But you know, think about maybe just taking the screens off and putting on storm windows. And Marvin makes a wood storm window, which works aesthetically with old farmhouses if you're keeping that particular aesthetic. So proceed with caution.
Maria emailed to ask if there are any contractors out there that can address a 30-year-old cobblestone chimney issue, cracks, stones falling out, cracks that critters can access.
Yes. Now, the question is exactly what type of chimney do we have? Is this wood frame with a thin veneer? It might even be a manufactured stone. It might not be real cobblestone. We see cobblestone chimneys entire buildings in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900, and they're great. There's a church in northern Wisconsin. It's just fabulous. The whole thing is little cobblestones. But I have a feeling that Maria's chimney may be thin veneer, and thin veneer has a very limited life. So I don't know where she's located in Wisconsin. She didn't tell us, did she?
No.
Yeah, so she needs to contact a local mason who really knows something. If it's thin veneer, she needs to go online and look at the Masonry Veneer Manufacturers Association guidelines or the Natural Stone Institute installation guidelines. And that is going to give you a lot of information. If this is a concrete block chimney, CMU chimney, with applied stone with an airspace, I just don't see that happening. The cobblestone chimneys are so difficult to build, and the cobblestone walls are so difficult to build. They were usually mass walls. So I'm not exactly sure what Maria has, but I would talk to a couple of masons. If they say you have thin veneer, make sure you download these information forms. Give one to the mason because he's probably never seen it before, and that way the job will get done right.
Dan emailed to ask if energy analysts can only do their analysis during the cold weather months, and is a certification required to be able to perform an energy analysis?
We can indeed do
energy analysis all around the year. It's, as I said, you get more information, I think, in the winter. But the blower door test, your air leaks are there whether it's summer or winter. It really doesn't make much difference. Mm-hmm. And the blower door test I consider sometimes to be the most important part because air leaks are really an issue. As I said, 40% of our utilities are taking care of air leaks. I believe that all energy inspectors are required to be certified because of money from Focus on Energy and other places like that. And I believe you can still go to Focus on Energy, type in your area, and can get certified contractors off of a list that they maintain, if they're maintained. I haven't looked there in a couple years, but they used to do that.
Okay. Claire in River Falls will give you a chance. Hi, Claire.
Hi. I have a 1972 ranch. The bottom base of it is red brick. And then it was remodeled in the 90s. They used stucco, and now I'm hearing about I wish they had whitewashed it because it's got paint. And the woodpeckers actually also love to make holes in it in the winter.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly fighting that. But my issue is that the brick on the lower level by the, you know, we have a front porch in the front door, just with 50 years of dripping on it, the brick is peeling away. And
yeah.
It's maybe half an inch thick, so it's not real full brick. And we can't even find anyone who wants to touch it. They said everyone's doing new work, and they mm-hmm. can't probably find the brick. We couldn't find the replace because there's enough brick still elsewhere on the bottom level of the house. And so I thought we could stucco it. And I have a contractor who says, yes, he thinks he can too. Does that make sense?
I don't think so. Thin veneer has an extremely high failure rate. I'd say it's about 99%. No, it's really a problem. I'm finding rotted walls behind the thin veneer, etc. I would talk to a local knowledgeable mason and ask him to do a little bit of investigation wherever it looks the worst. Most masons are able to cut out little sections, save the material, and then see what's going on. I want to make sure that your walls are not decaying. Because usually what I find when I'm finding problems with thin veneers, I'm finding the walls behind it are decayed. So you're going to need some really good expert advice. And it could be because your masons know the issues that are out there with thin veneer that they're saying they'd really like to replace it all. Because then if there is a problem, they can fix the sheathing or even, I've seen even decayed studs. So talk to people, get as much information as you can. Again, go to the Masonry Veneer Manufacturers Association, download their wonderful booklet with 53 illustrations that everybody can understand, or go to the Natural Stone Veneer Institute. Same thing. I would go to the Veneer Manufacturers Association because everything is very similar and theirs is the most complete. But you can give yourself really quite an education. So when you talk to these masons, you really know what you're talking about and you know what the expectations are if it gets replaced.
There you go. Paul in Appleton emailed to ask how he should set his new programmable thermostat throughout the day. Should he follow normal heating and cooling periods outside throughout the day and night?
Good question that I can't answer. I have a programmable thermostat in my house, and it's sort of like we're in the house, we're out of the house, we're in the house, out of the house. You know, turning it down for the whole day, does it make sense? Paul, it's pretty much lifestyle dependent. If you're gone all day, yes, decrease the temperature a little bit, but don't get it too low. I'm afraid I can't give you a lot of advice on that. You've got me stumped.
Ron in Campbellsport, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I've got a house that's 20 years old, and we've got all in-floor hydronic heat. And I have a lot of problems in the wintertime with moisture on my windows. You know, the colder it gets, the worse moisture is. We also have a forced air furnace, you know, for our air conditioning, but we really don't ever use forced air furnace or the fan.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm looking for ideas on how to get rid of that moisture on the windows or what's the best.
Well, the first thing I think we want to do, Ron, is we want to find out how much humidity you have in the house. So you want to buy yourself a humidistat, a good one, and then you want to start making some recordings. Mm-hmm. And if you are above 40%
in the winter, unless you've really, really got good windows, you're going to get some condensation. If you're at 50 to 60%, you could be getting a lot of condensation. So the first thing you need to do is figure out what the humidity loads are on the house. If it is high, then you need to think about how do we lower humidity. Well, we need to have bath fans, things like that. They need to be running. It's possible that we're going to need a heat recovery ventilator system for the winter to bring in dry outside air and get some of this wet inside air out. So first, do a little bit of study, you know, study at least for a month or so, see what's going on. And if you find that you've got humidity in excess of 40, 45%, certainly above 50% or 55%, that you want to talk to an HVAC contractor about how to get fresh air into your house. And the HRVs, although you can have some mold issues unless you maintain them well, is the most energy efficient way of doing it because you're scavenging the heat, the BTUs, in the air you're rejecting, and you're warming the air that's coming in.
Good luck with that, Ron. Thank you for calling. Thomas emailed, he lives in an apartment with an unvented gas stove. In summer, he opens the window to get rid of fumes. What can he do in the winter? The ceiling and cupboards are pretty greasy from the exhaust. Unvented gas stoves and furnaces are approved by the Madison Code. What can he do to protect himself from the fumes?
Yeah, so it sounds like Tom does not have a hood. So when he's cooking, we're getting grease and CO2. You may remember about a year ago, Larry, it's like somebody was saying, well, the government's going to ban all gas stoves, and there's this huge, huge uproar. Well, eventually that is going to happen. We are going to be getting rid of gas stoves because of the CO problems and the indoor air quality issues. And Tom's correct, you crack a window in the summer. In the winter, it's extremely difficult. I would talk to the landlord and say you've got some concerns. You want to make very sure you've got a CO monitor that is working. I have one that's plugged into my kitchen so that if I'm cooking a lot, I know what the CO is. So study the problem a little bit. At least send a note to your landlord telling him that they're concerned. Maybe he'd be willing to put a hood on the stove so that as you're cooking, at least we're getting some air change in the house because it's going to leak in through the doors, walls, and windows as the hood is mechanically removing air from your apartment.
And on that happy note, we are out of time, John. Thank you so much for being with us today. I always appreciate it. And we will look forward to your next visit.
It has been a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you again, Larry.
And don't forget that we have John's fall checklist on our website. Go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry. It's a great list of things that you should be looking at relating to your house and the landscape area as we get into the winter season. And just go to ideas@wpr.org/Larry and look to today's date under the comments section. And just a reminder as well that Freiberger & Associates is Freiberger Consulting, I should say, is one of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors. Thank you all for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.